A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Brad, it's late.
Oh, for us old dads.
It's late for us old dads. I've been in a recording studio all day.
Yeah, dude, I know. You're like, you're burning the candle at both ends.
Making albums, making records.
Making podcasts,
creating things.
Products.
Oh, not bad.
Must feel good though, dude.
It's nice. It's nice to be playing. Honestly, like... You know, I'm just that type of person. I'm not in the moment. I'm really not very self-reflective, and I kind of just adapt to the situations around me, and I don't really think about it very much. And getting in the studio and working on this stuff, I kind of forget. I'm like, oh, right. Like, this is what you do, motherfucker. And you feel really good doing it. And it's awesome. And you know, like, sometimes I need to get back in the fray to even remember.
So do you have like your station, you know, like,
what do you mean?
I always have like, you know, like I always have to have like my station for tracking, like where I have like stuff at hand that I can reach, like picks and a capo and like drinks over here.
Sure.
You know, yeah. The whole setup. I get really,
I'll do a drum station, but I'm also like, when I'm like tracking, I'm kind of like, I'm not really like vibe. Like, I'm not trying to be like, yo, I'm trying to like groove in my vibe right now. Like, I'm pretty hyped up.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I like to be like really focused, super alert. I don't like listening to playbacks on my headphone. I like standing up and going into the control room and listening in front of the board.
Right.
Just so I can like really focus and move my body around. Yo, thanks, dog. And, so yeah, but my station will almost always include definitely fabric band-aids.
Yeah.
you know, normal drum stuff, water, coffee, and these days, yeah, that's about it. Pretty basic, you know? Like when I'm in those tracking days, I'm really trying to just like really stay focused. I mean, you know, I'm sure you've been through this. Like it only takes one time when you're younger to kind of fudge apart in the studio or do something you're not so sure about, and then you listen to it and hate it forever for the rest of your life, which sucks.
Oh yeah.
It's not a good feeling. So, you know, the older I get, I just try to take as many steps as possible to avoid that feeling. Mm-hmm. At least with my own stuff. So, but it's coming out great, man. I'm really enjoying it.
That's awesome. I'm jealous.
How was your July 4th? Did you do something real New York?
Yes, indeed.
Uh-oh. Who did you see?
We spent it on the waterfront over here with, you know, the entire Lower East Side. It was like a fucking war zone, dude. I mean,
oh, was it nuts?
Oh my God. You know, I mean, we didn't need the Macy's fireworks, put it that way, because the Dominicans had it like going off, like right up your ass.
Yes. Full on local fireworks.
I mean, like, not only do they get these immense, huge, like professional fireworks, but they think nothing of lighting them off like 6 feet away from you as you're like trying to get your kids up the river to like see the Macy's show. It was pretty, it was really intense. It was pretty hilarious.
And what, like, I'm a little confused. Like, what happened in the last 5 years? Because, like, fireworks used to be illegal. And I don't think they are anymore.
It's like, it's gradually loosened up. And I think just over the last, like, what's been going on over the last year and a half, the cops are just like, you know what? I got other shit to deal with.
when I was a kid, you had only two resources to get fireworks. If you wanted to get them any time of the year, you could go to Chinatown,
right,
New York.
Right, right.
And you could find some. Yeah. But then they used to set up these like firework, like pop-up shops, like right over the border in Pennsylvania.
Oh, really? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like right over the border. And right. They'd set, you know, like some closed fucking Party City or something. Right. Is like firework bonanza for a month. And then, you know, you go and get the shit and drive back. But now it's all over the place. I guess, you know, Jason Pierre-Paul taking off a finger and a half proved to them that fireworks are safe for everyone. I mean, listen, Americans are getting smarter and smarter by the day. So I think you can give us more responsibility with things that can blow us up, right?
Sure. Why not?
More guns, more fireworks. We can handle it. I will use my sarcasm to introduce my dear, dear friend, one of my favorite people on earth, Brad Clifford, who is immensely talented and focused and amazing. I'm always impressed with Brad. He, you know, started in, you know, as a great guitar player. He's in pretty fairly legendary, you know, hardcore band from Milwaukee called Synths by Man, who was on Revelation, and then did a few years in Poison the Well, and eventually got on the road teching, and just worked for great fucking bands like, you know, Taken Back Sunday, Against Me, Gaslight, Slipknot, Mastodon. You know, he just goes from band to band, and you know, no one ever has a bad thing to say about him. I think one of the cool indicators of the kind of dude Brad is like, you know, he said the story in this interview that I'd never heard, which was when he had the opportunity to go to Poison the Well from Synths by Man. And he literally got his band's blessing to do it. Yeah. Like, when the fuck does that happen? Like, that is really weird.
That's the only time.
That's like the only time. Exactly. And to follow it up, when Gaslight first was recommended Brad by our friend Scott, it was a little last minute. And we had asked him to do not only a tour, but like, yo, you want to come do like the cycle, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you can do the whole tour.
Right.
And he, because he's a great guy, he had like a 3-week or something tour booked with Taken Back Sunday. And he was like, listen, I can't start with you guys because I'm committed to Taken Back Sunday and I got to do this. And those dudes heard about like his predicament and literally told him, hey, Brad, you should really take that job. We'll find somebody else. You know, like this is the kind of human we're talking about. Like,
that's
this is
pretty cool.
It's kind of just indicative of like the type of person he is. He's very giving. And I think people are really willing to give back to him. But I found Brad when we started traveling together, like just this really calming and uplifting and motivating spirit to have around. And even to the point that Brad and I started rooming together for years, just because the vibe was right, you know, and it just felt good. And it's a nice person to be around. And I was so happy to have him on. I happened to be in the studio today next to old Jared Hart.
Yeah.
So he came and filled in and asked some fun questions. Jared has been tracking vocals literally all day long. So I can't even believe he still has a voice, let alone doing the interview. So that was a lot of fun, though.
Yeah.
And Brad has lots of great stories. Why don't we? Should we hear some?
Let's listen to them.
Technology is a wonder, isn't it?
Studio engineers, if they can't figure out your audio troubles, who can, you know?
I hear Brad.
You know what I realized, Brad, during this session of recording is that I needed to change the way I do things to...
Because there's no ambient light?
No. That is a factor that we must speak about.
Of course.
Because we are recording an album without our lighting system that I needed. But
I mean,
we had a few songs going into this that like we had the skeletons for, and like they were these good tracks, but we didn't get to the point where I got to like really figure out like the nuances. And I'm like, how am I going to do this thing from like top to bottom? And then, you know, I'm like half a day in the studio and I'm realizing it's just not the way it's done anymore. And the guy's like, listen, nobody comes in here anymore and then plays a song from beginning to end. So you could just take it part for part, you know? I'm like, oh my God, recording's so easy now. Like you could just kind of like, you just miff your way through now. I don't have to stress nearly as much as I used to.
It's true. You just punch in that one fill. You just, you know, singular track everything. Just record the snare drum on this take.
Yeah. Fine. Why not?
Benny, have you ever had anyone ask you to play the cymbals on a separate take?
Nothing besides for like having samples. No.
Okay. I've seen people do this in the studio and it seems ridiculous. It's like asking a guitar player like, all right, cool, play it, but without this one string. And then we'll do another take of just that one string.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm not really up for stuff like that unless, you know, there's like something in my head that I can't get it to sound like that. And if that's the case, then I'll do anything to make it sound like that. But it's like normally not the case. I don't know. So Brad, how's the Great Northwest? How did you fare during the heat wave?
It's pretty good. I will say the heat wave was notable. Two thirds of places here do not have air conditioning. And when it's like 107,
yeah,
it's one of those things you take for granted.
Sure. So
it's almost like climate change is real, though.
Yeah.
Wild, yeah. It almost seems like it's real.
I know. Almost like there's anecdotal evidence all in front of our faces.
Yeah. I mean, I'm skeptical of everything, but turns out everyone who's an expert is right.
Yeah. This one seems legit, being that everything's like on fire.
The ocean.
So, I mean, did you see any like were there like cooling centers where they're like people really like looking for help? Was it like out in the streets or did it not like last that long that it became something like that?
It was like 3 days, but there is a heavy like houseless population here because of it being insane cost of living. But yeah, I mean, I didn't really get out too much. I kind of just, we went to like a river float one day, which was nice. And the other day, I'm lucky to have to live in a place that has like a concrete basement where my like little workshop of things is. So I just made pedals for most of the day and it was like 70 down there. So no complaints.
That's good.
But very, very fortunate situation to be in.
How are you taking to being a West Coaster?
It's good. There are many days when I like will leave the house and look in one direction and see like the Olympic Mountain Range and then look up the hill the other way and see the Cascade Mountain Range. And it's real freaky for a boy from the Midwest.
Yeah, sure.
But there's also many days that I just wake up and I'm like, I live on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Never thought that would happen, but here I am.
Are you like a permanent coastal installation now? Or do you see yourself going back to curd country at some point?
I never really cared where I end up, really. It's like wherever there's something for me, I'll, sure. Like, and here, there was definitely something for me in Seattle. So away I went. If that changes, then I'll go wherever. I don't know. I can make something of wherever, I guess. As long as there's a reason to be there, I can find positive in it, I think.
As long as there's a guitar to be fixed.
That's right.
Where's the last place you want to live, though?
The last place? Oh,
the
man.
The last place. Like the last... You know how Ian used to say like his whole thing was, I'm not going to die here?
Yeah.
Like, where's that place for Brad?
Oh, yeah.
Lately, it's just got to be that piece of the ocean that's on fire.
Yeah, that's a good point. I wouldn't want to live there either.
Bad. There's a little platform next to it, which is cool. So you can just like get out of the fiery water for a little bit and maybe chill on that platform.
Get a tan.
But aside from that, there's not a lot of import and exporting. There's not a lot of gardens. There's not a lot of access to goods that you might want.
I think
so. I don't want to go there. I don't want to die there. Good place to die. Bad place to live.
Strong.
That's very strong.
Great answer.
But I think Jared's going for the meat here, Brad. We want shit talking. What's a
you
city
want shit talking? You came to the wrong guy.
You don't like.
Oh, man. Or you just had like a miserable, you know, like.
Or like, yeah, one of those towns, it's always raining. Like, ah, every time I'm in Kansas City, it's overcast. Like,
like what? Like Seattle? this is bad. Like, I feel like a terrible shit talker in that I can't find a place that I'm just like, yo, fuck that city for real.
No, I think it's indicative of you and your ability to find the positive in even the shittiest of places.
Even the ocean on fire.
I'm curious. I mean, like now, you know, we're going to get into this a lot about your background and playing music and teching and all that. But when's the last time you had a 9-to-5?
Never. This is the like right
the
now.
First time.
Yeah, I've never had a 9-to-5 in my life.
Wow. So how are you taking, like, how are you finding it? Like, what, is there anything you've really, like, been exposed to as a result that you, like, had never been able to see before, like, about the grind, the daily grind of, like, a normal person like that?
Yeah, it's definitely a grind because, like, you know, tour is a grind and all that stuff too, but there's, like, more periodic days off on tour stuff and... I don't know, the 9-to-5 thing. It's cool to come home every night, but it's also, I guess I'm used to like the thing of tour where, you know, at the end of the day, there's the event that you're, the reason right. you're there and you're the whole day is building up to this pinnacle. So mm-hmm. you have that. But then the 9-to-5 is like the whole day you're just building up to when the anti-climax of just being like, well, I'm done now. And then you cruise home, you know? But it's exhausting. And it's oddly more stressful, I think.
Really?
Yeah, which I like I've told that to a few friends and it's pretty surprising. But I think maybe it's just for the work that I like, you know, I'll take it seriously and people's instruments like are very personal to them.
Yeah.
So I'm constantly, you know, every guitar someone comes in to pick up after repairing, it's like, are they going to like it? Are they going to come back? Are they going to hate it? Like.
Right.
What's the thing? And there's not a lot of people who will want to make adjustments, but there is that like, you good? Is this to your liking?
Wow. So really like you feel more, nervous handing off a guitar to some rando at the guitar shop than like the dude from Slipknot on stage.
Yeah. Cause there's not their personal relationship. Like you don't know how this person likes it unless they're explicitly telling you certain things they do or like, just like, I don't know, man, make it rip, you know?
Yeah.
But that means different things to different people. And not that I'm like sweating it. You know, the job is the job and you kind of know what works for most people.
Right.
But yeah.
So how are you getting motivated for it? Like, I know you're so fueled by, you know, just being in a different place all the time and seeing different people in different cities and, you know, mm-hmm. when you can, you know, getting out to explore those towns. And I know that's very motivating for you. So like, what are you doing? Are you doing anything new on a day to day to kind of get yourself moving and make sure you're motivated for the day?
Not really. Yeah. I've definitely had to like adjust schedule and things. Like I used to be the kind of dude who just wakes up 15 minutes before I have to be somewhere and be like, right. all right, I'm out, you know, like slap on some pants and I'm good. But now I kind of have to like wake up a little extra hour early and ease into things and kind of get in, which reminds me of you. I feel like that's a very Benny process to like, you know, prepare yourself and give yourself like the moment of clarity to be where you're going to be.
It's true. I try.
Yeah.
And that's why it takes so long to do anything, though.
But, like, I got to wake up. I got to have a 45-minute bath.
You know, I find it with kids. I'm just better. Like, if I can manage to wake up 45 minutes, hour before my kids do, and I just have a fucking minute to just, like, get my head on right, drink some coffee, you know, take in anything but that. But when I have to go straight from, like, waking up to the grind, I'm just worse. I'm in a worse mood. I'm just less lively, you know, less sleep. I understand. And then I see these fucking parents, you know, everybody's, you feel insecure in any section of life, right? Like I wake up at like 6 a.m. and I'm like, all right, I got 45 minutes here, sip on some coffee, maybe check up on this. And then I see like the dude from 2 doors down fucking running you know, at like six, like doing all this stuff. I'm like, oh, fuck, is that what you got to do out here? Like fitness dad?
And that's when you just crack your window and you scream, overachiever!
Shut up! You're probably getting skin cancer. Go home. Something like that.
Do you usually wake up before the kids? Like, do you get that time?
I do. I mean, I kind of like make myself, you know, it's like,
yeah,
where, you know, someone might take a piss and go back to sleep. I just like make myself stay up and drink the coffee and enjoy the time. I'll even take like a weird power nap. I read a thing where since it takes coffee 20 minutes to kick in, you can like start drinking some coffee and then take like a 10-15 minute power nap and you're kind of awoken with like the bolt of caffeine. It kind of works.
That's like taking uppers and downers at the same time.
I know.
Trying to race them against each other.
We're all just recovered junkies. It's better than what I used to do, right?
So, like, man, I used to do uppers and downers, and now I just drink coffee and try to take a nap, see which wins.
Same shit. So I found something funny. A quote from you.
Oh, no.
From at least 20 years ago, okay?
This can't be good.
So you were in the group Synths by Man.
Sure.
You know, wonderful group from Milwaukee. And I found an old interview with you, Brad Clifford. And they asked about a tour coming up. And this is you in quotes, okay? The honeybee is that we're going to be on tour for a long time. I love that you even said that, the honeybee. Like, man. A month and a half at the Bled, starting late February, then a month in Europe with Bear versus Shark directly after that. It should be epic as hell, and we're all excited. And I've already promised that our new shtick is going to be to stick our fingers in people's mouths while we play, and we're going to tickle their throats until they vomit. Sounds sketchy. What the fuck is that all about?
I mean, that's just normal Brad Clifford shit.
That makes me laugh.
So
I've got no excuses for that one. I thought it was going to be worse.
Worse.
So oh, yeah.
Was this your vibe when you were in band? Were you a troll? Were you like one of the early like analog trolls?
No, I was definitely. I was actually thinking about this earlier today. I had many most of the time that I spent in bands in like younger years was very like I felt very young and like. Mm. I was like, oh, let's just be wild. Yeah, like,
right.
Is like funny coming from like a straight edge kid who didn't like get fucked up and get wild that way, but just
sure.
Like doing silly, dumb stuff all the time.
Was it like a way to feel like, you know, a little more subversive, like since you're not doing the drunk drugs, like smash bottles over your head kind of punk rock, it's kind of more of a, not taking the thing too seriously in that way, like was a little bit of your way to show that dissension?
I feel like most of my life has been like hanging out with the drunk people and waiting for them to get real wild just so I can encourage things to get more like definitely the instigator of like,
yeah.
Hey, okay. Now that you're like ready to do dumb shit, let's go do this.
Right.
That's dangerous, Brad, because you got to think as the sober guy, people look to you to like see if what they're doing is like too much because they're fucked up. Mm. So like when you approve of it, everyone's like, oh, if Brad says it's cool. So you're playing with fire.
Yeah, that's probably true.
And I like
it. But I'm into it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely times when things get too sketchy and you're like, ooh, that's on you. That's on you. And you step back because you always have that, you know, you're like, I'm not the one who's fucked up here.
Yeah, but. I'm out.
Yep. Your bunk curtain closed.
That's right.
Now, like in those days, you know, like, you know, Synths by Man was kind of part of that, you know, early, foray into some of these bands, like, you know, using a little kind of mathiness in the hardcore, maybe some early parts of metalcore and post-hardcore. I mean, at the time, you know, did you know you all were like part of some, you know, forward movement, or were you just like writing songs that, you know, felt good at the time? Like, was there an intention that you guys were doing something new and different?
Not for me. I joined the band after they put out their first full length. So right. The groundwork had been kind of laid as far as style. And things just continued sort of in that vein. I mean, I maybe remember one time during practice of writing something, getting like really stoked and thinking like, nobody does this. Like, I can't think of another band that this sounds like.
Right.
But I'm sure if I heard that exact same part today in retrospect, I'd be like, oh, it sounds like this, you know?
right.
But and it didn't feel like super musically progressive or anything. It felt like a melting pot of different things, which just seemed like natural. You know, like most bands kind of take from this, take from that. So it just felt like that kind of thing.
And how did you like, what was the process of going from Synth by Man to Poison the Well?
So there was a tour that was Under Oath, Poison the Well, and Synth by Man. So we became friends on that tour and I just kept up with him. And, the guitar player previous to me was a tattoo artist, who was doing pretty well with that. And I kind of got the feeling that he was going to be dedicating more time to that. So they're recording the Versions record when, he stopped being in the band. And I kind of joked around with the singer and was like, oh, cool. When do I move, man? Like, just there was nothing behind it, kind of a laugh. And then like the next week he's like, hey, were you serious about that? I'm like, wait, what do you mean? And he's like, I mean, because I mentioned it and people seem like curious about the idea. I'm like, oh.
Oh, wow.
I hadn't really entertained that in a serious way, but.
Right.
And so then kind of, but I was in a band at the time. So I went to band practice and flew out the idea and everybody was just like, it seems like something you want to do. And I know that's like in the style of things you dig. And I know you want to do more touring and more things like that. So they were supportive of me doing it. And
wow.
Yeah. That was kind of the transition.
That's awesome.
That's awesome that you got them like behind you to make that move. That's like really special to have that kind of support for that.
Oh, absolutely. Like all the Synth by Man guys are, like, we're always solid people and like they're still homies to this day. And I don't see that would change. It was just like a great band to be in and great people.
Milwaukee people, good people.
Salt of the earth.
Salty curd country, nice people. Now, you got to take me behind the curtain a little with Poison the Well, because you know I know Poison the Well a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, Jeff taught me how to make an apple bowl in the 90s. Very important to me, you know, things like that. But I had even kind of forgot until I was like getting into this, like besides for Jeff, Ryan, and Chris, there's a remarkable amount of members of Poison the Well over the years. And
oh, yeah,
you actually
totally.
Have a substantially longer stretch than a bulk of the others.
Really? Now,
like, yeah. Like a 4-year stretch is like pretty solid. You're in like the top 10. Like just as far as band operations went, like, why do you think there's so much turnaround? And when you were in the band, like, was it ever a very like settled experience or were you, did it kind of feel like you may be in and you may be out?
I started off just being like, but being brought in as a hired gun, cause they had recorded Versions as a 3-piece essentially.
Right.
And we're just
they
looking
went
for
like
a couple.
Scandinavia or something, right?
Yeah. They did it with Pelle and Eskil in Sweden.
Right.
So they just, you know, players to play on that. So yeah, I came in just kind of doing that thing. And then through the course of that cycle, when it sort of ended and they were going to start writing for the next record, then me and the bass player, another Brad, started writing with him to kind of see how that would go and then ended up becoming members at that time.
Right.
Yeah. But it definitely never felt like my thing, you know, like it's such an established band and
right.
And like I said too, like how I was always like young and stupid and wanted like definitely in retrospect felt like that. And I was just wanted to like go crazy on stage and play fast, you know, like all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
They were definitely much more matured musicians than me. And it was the first time in my life playing with them that I had to like, oh, like my timing's really bad.
I have
to focus on my musicianship. It's not about like putting on the show or being wild or, you know, stuff like that.
Right,
things that did seem to be a priority in bands previous.
You kind of had to step up that side.
Yeah, or try to, you know. But yeah, it was very much their thing. It definitely didn't feel like, oh, this is the Brad version of the band. Like, it's not that vibe going on at right. all, you know?
And you never, like, really had the impression, like, yo, I'm in, like, Poison the Well forever.
No.
No.
And not that I was, like, waiting for the axe or anything like that.
Sure.
But, yeah.
Oh, it's interesting. Yeah, I saw, like, Poison the Well is getting a lot of love in retrospect, kind of, you know, as like one of those pioneering bands that we were kind of talking about earlier, sort of like changed the game a little bit, changed that style of music.
Yeah.
When you're like writing with Poison the Well, how's the process? Is it like kind of stem from Ryan down?
Yeah, mostly. Yeah, I mean, he's a great guitar player and he, you know, a lot of the band's sound is his vibe, you know?
Sure.
So yeah, some of that, the Tropic Rot was the last record. And I mean, it's hard to break down percentages, but there was like one song that I wrote the skeletons of, and then we'd contribute like parts here and there. There's certain songs that are like, you know, kind of go riff for riff and arrangement. But yeah, by and large, I think, I mean, definitely the Chris, Ryan, Jeff dynamic is that band.
Right.
And there was no, definitely not like any, at least for me personally, no, like, oh, whoa, I'm writing with this epic band kind of thing. Right, even though I don't remember, I'm terrible with years. I don't remember what age I started playing with them, but, I mean, like,
according to Wikipedia, it was 2006, Brad.
Okay. Well, like,
and your discogs.
We asked Alexa.
Yeah.
Hey, Alexa, tell me about, but like, you know, when Opposite of December came out, I was definitely a fan. And
oh yeah,
like all that stuff to me, aside from any personal involvement, I definitely think it is influential on so many other bands and was like, maybe legendary is a weird word for any band, but certainly within that scene of things was a really important band and like really important releases, I think.
Hey, Brad.
Yeah.
So I like love when friends hop in other bands and just get down with it. So was there a song that you were most stoked to rip live when you joined Poison the Well? Like that you were like, I'm going to lose my absolute mind playing nerdy
right
at the end of the set.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean that a lot of like the Opposite of December stuff, you know, I'm trying to keep up and like learn the songs early in rehearsal. So it's like a much more chill thing. But I definitely remember my first show was like, I don't know, like a small club in South Carolina or something like that. And playing like some of those songs on stage definitely did have like sort of a surreal feeling of like, whoa, I'm like the guy who has to play these parts right now, like kind of trippy.
Wait, did you have some impressive stage moves? I mean, because I see these pictures of you when you were young, so slim. So handsome, you know, so charismatic.
Nimble.
Much, you had that swaft much more hair. Of hair, that swaft of hair going over your forehead.
You had a little comb over vibe?
Yeah, man. If I don't know, I definitely did then.
Yes.
I like to refer to that look as the emo lion. Looking back on that photo, I'm like, yeah, that's the vibe.
What was the vibe? Did you do the spinnies? Did you flip guitars like around your shoulders? Oh, yeah. Did you do all that shit?
No, I don't know. I've never wanted to like it to be a real like shticky, planned out, like I've got moves kind of thing.
Right.
You've got the height for the guitar flip though.
You
the,
do.
The over the over the shoulder because
that's true.
I'm a little lower to, you know, like vertically impaired. So a neck usually would crash into the floor if I attempted to do that.
That's
so
true.
I feel like you would get a good clearance.
I don't think, I mean, plus at that time we were into nice guitars, which deters the guitar flip.
Copy.
I can't imagine it's deterred it from all the people you've worked for. like that's one of the things I know about you. You know, I know how much you care about those guitars and how much work you put into them to make sure they're right. Do you ever just hand it off to someone and you're just like, oh, don't do that?
Oh, no, it's the opposite. Like,
oh,
I want people to destroy things, A, because I think it makes a better show.
Yeah.
I mean, not if they're like planning it and like, yeah, sure. This song, smash your guitar, you know, like sure, that's sure. Stupid.
Yeah.
But I worked for At The Drive-In briefly, and the guy I worked for was like, oh man, like I kind of wanted to throw my guitar at the end of that show, but I felt weird about it. I'm like, why? He's like, I don't want to make extra work for you. And I'm like, dude, whatever you can do, if it feels right, it's probably going to make for a better show. And I might not be able to fix everything, but I'm open for the challenge. So yeah. If you can come up with something I can't fix, I'll figure it out one way or another. Just do it.
And that's kind of part and parcel for really your whole philosophy about the thing, right? Is like really, you know, your contribution to the entire thing is so important to the overall show that you see it almost as like we're all playing a part here in a larger experience. And because of that, like, does that mean you just like can't take jobs for bands you don't like?
No, I mean, I'd be willing to work for whoever, but I guess I've been lucky to have the option of working for people that I have some interest in, at least,
right. Yeah.
Over the like, you know, something that may offer more money, but I don't have any musical interest in or anything like that.
Right.
Plus it's like sort of the investment thing. You know, if you like somebody, you're going to be more attentive to the things, you're going to want things to be better for them. And although I, you know, wouldn't want that to be the case and affect the job, like I'm sure it does, even in a subconscious way.
I just want to see you get a job for like Third Eye Blind and just be like, Steve, what the fuck, man? Don't do that. Cause you're like, I don't care about your show, you know? Like, so, but that goes into something else. Cause you've had like this really great, you know, because of your experience playing and you're such a big fan of music. And now because of your job, you've essentially had like one of the best seats in the house watching thousands of shows with great fucking bands.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are some like hardcore cemented do's and don'ts for a live band? Like, what are something like, say you're talking to a young band right now. You're like, listen, two things, always do this. Two things, never fucking do that. Like, what are they? What are like cardinal rules?
Like from a how to operate your band standpoint or from like strictly a live performance thing?
In this context, live performance. I do have a follow-up as far as the band thing goes.
Okay. Live performance. The only times it gets really cringy for me is when things are like very planned out and very cheesy. Mm. But that's just me. And I know some of that shit, like crowds eat up.
Right.
But for me, it's like, I don't know, any stuff that's like, you give the same speech every night, or you give the, like, here's the clap along part, or some stuff like that is just like, yeah, whatever to me.
Right. Sure.
But I mean, anything that, maybe it's just like a less, it's more of a, like a theatrical thing. Like you have your shtick, it works well for you night after night. And that's kind of the way it goes.
Right.
Like
right.
I get that standpoint of it, but I think I definitely find it more endearing and more to what I dig about music and live stuff when bands are just like, I'm feeling it. I'm going to do this tonight, you know?
Sure. And you think it's like also an ancillary, like beneficial to the band to do that, you know, like in the long run?
That's where you figure
that's
out if you've got it or you,
in, right?
Yeah, it's where like, well, that's also where you figure if you've got it or you don't. Like, you know, if you're coming up with different things every night or doing things a little differently, like you're trying it out. Like you don't know what's gonna fly. Like some people might not respond to this,
sure.
Or you might not pull it off. Whatever you're trying to do,
yeah, sure.
So I guess that all comes down to the individual of how well they know what's gonna play or how well the crowd's just into whatever they're going to do, you know?
And what's a do? Like, what's something like, hey, you're about to go start playing good shows. Make sure you're doing this.
I mean, certainly from my standpoint is make sure your equipment is solid.
Right.
Like we've all been to shows and worked shows where things fail, at very bad times.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like, oh, you're playing a stadium And all of a sudden, this goes down. Like, you probably could have spent more time working on that, or, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I think just having all of that locked in. I mean, that's the whole point of anything I do or any other tech or whatever.
Right.
Or anybody who cares for their own stuff too. You know, this is all a tool. Like, it's the less you have to think about it, the better. So the more you can prepare for it in that way, so you don't have to think about it, and it is just the vehicle for you to make music.
Yeah, sure.
That's what you got to do, you know?
Yeah, badass. Now, like, to wrap around to that other thing, you know, in the same token, you know, you've been on stage 1,000 times. You've also been in 1,000 tour buses and watched 1,000 bands, you know, have these interpersonal dynamics. So I'm sure you've seen, you know, and from a tech's point of view, you often have to watch these conversations play out without being able to really offer your opinion into them. So, I mean, A, like, is that ever frustrating? Like, do you ever just see people arguing and you know there's just this painfully simple solution that you just cannot offer?
No, because it's such a personal thing. Like, I will say it's kind of the opposite. For me personally, it's extremely liberating. Being around those conversations.
So you're like, I don't have to kind of fucking be part of it.
Yeah, like that's one of the toughest things about being in a band to me is that,
you know,
you like, it's a democracy in most bands. So you are like, you care a lot about this one thing or this one aspect of something. Like, I really believe like this song should be the first one to be released from the record or something like that.
Right.
But then everyone else disagrees with you. Like, it can be a really tough dynamic. And then there's, you know, so many conversations around that, and you're trying to get other people to see your perspective and they're trying to get you to see yours. There really has to be a lot of good communication and dynamics in that band for it to work out well and still be like a happy thing, I think. So not having to have my heart invested in those kind of things is pretty liberating. And
yeah,
I mean, there's countless times being around bands when they're like, you know, having the disagreements or serious talks that every band has, and being able to just be like, well, I'll be over here.
Yeah.
You let me know what you want to do, dog.
I'll be chilling in Brad World. Whenever you got some good vibes to bring me. Now, that being said, like, you know, even though you can't really offer your, you know, your counsel in the moment or something, or, you know, you enjoy getting away from it, like, what are some things that you've seen the higher functioning bands you've been around, the bands that have good dynamics and operate well and speak well to each other? Like, what are the common things and the threads that you find in like bands like that?
I think that's more like love and respect for each other. Like, you know, you're more likely to hear someone's opinion for what it is, even over your own, if you really care about this person who's talking to you. So I kind of think the more you're close and invested with your bandmates or whoever you're working with, the kind of easier it is to be open to that kind of thing.
Right.
So I think the more successful bands that I've seen navigate those situations are people who have pretty close relationships.
Right.
Or kind of the flip of that is bands who operate in a less democratic way.
Right.
Where it's, there's like one leader and everyone kind of either kind of knows their role in that and is kind of like, yeah, I'm riding the wave of this person, you know?
Right.
Or who is just kind of, you know, it's been decided that like, this is the person who has kind of the largest vision.
Sure.
And everyone can be, put themselves in a place where they're supportive of that.
Right.
Like those two dynamics seem to be the most successful in my outside understanding, you know?
Yeah, it makes sense. And what does it take for like, you know, the non-democratic band? Like, what does it take for the leader of that group to keep everyone engaged and pleased underneath it? Like what helps with that?
I don't know. I mean, I've seen
I don't say underneath. That's maybe a bad way to put it. Underneath them. But you know, like the other pieces.
The peons.
Yeah, the peons.
Yeah. The peons of the band.
Play your bass.
Eat your crap. You get hummus and chips.
What more do you require?
Drink tickets and hummus is not enough for you?
Quiet Benny, a tambourine doesn't need to be played.
It's the staple of any musician. Drink tickets, hummus, and chips. Any more is frivolous. I will be at the Sizzler if you need me.
Is there still a Sizzler out there?
No, probably not.
I think the Cheesecake Factory is the new Sizzler.
That's the new Sizzler one.
I think so.
Sizzler. I don't really see a lot of people trying to make sure that. Like I don't see the leader being like, all right, I'm going to treat everyone nice, or I'm going to make sure everyone feels respected. I feel like part of the leader role is like being dominant.
Wow.
Whether they know it or not. Like, I don't think it's always a conscious thing.
Right.
But I think it's just like, I'm the leader, so I'm kind of doing this.
Right.
And it's not really like, hey guys, thanks for listening to me and supporting me. I don't think that's in the DNA of that role necessarily. And not that's a bad thing. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, no, it's an interesting dynamic. And I think of sometimes even like, you know how like over the years, I've gotten a little more empathetic towards like security guards at venues. Mm-hmm. Cause one of the things I've realized is this, like, if you're really nice and really pleasurable, people try to take you for like so much more. So these security guards, they kind of like lay it down right off the bat. Like, yo, like, I'm serious about my job. Don't fuck with me, you know, and then we'll be all right. They kind of got to like lay it down a little. And I do think, I guess there's an aspect to leadership, unless you're like, you know, Dave Grohl or like one of these like gregarious leaders, you know, who somehow knows how to not only manage a band, but also like personalities. If you're not that, I could see what you're saying to be true, the idea that like, if you even think there's a negotiation coming up, it changes the dynamic. If you know there's no negotiation coming up, it makes for a fairly simple dynamic, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I could see the truth in it. I think the thing is, you know, the people underneath, as we said, the peons, they either have to be well compensated, or they have to be very like emotionally engaged and believe in the thing that's happening and believe in the person making the decisions, right? It's got to be one of the two, though.
I'm going to propose a third option.
Oh, okay.
The fear of change.
Oh.
I think so many people, especially in this, like it's a lifestyle. Like it's not just like a job, you know, it's like a full on lifestyle for a lot of people.
Sure.
Like if you're not doing this, what are you doing? Like it doesn't parlay really easily into another job quickly or another line of work or another option. It's kind of like you've got your ride. Are you going to get off? And then if so, what are you going to do? And how much are you going to hold your tongue because of that?
Right.
I feel like I see that, you know, pretty often.
Yeah, sure. Like just people kind of hanging on because they just don't want to lose their life, their lifestyle.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many positives and negatives but it is tough to just like totally change the train for a lot of things.
Yeah. It's a good point.
Like players, especially like, you know, like crew stuff is like total mercenary work and whatever. You could quit this band and go work for another one, but players, like whether they're hired or like members of the band in whatever capacity, like, I don't think it's real easy to jump from one to the next kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, that's true. So, so tell me a little bit about Slipknot. All right. Cause you know, my one story about Slipknot, right? Have I ever told you this?
I don't think so.
So I was backstage at a festival. I think it was a Nova Rock perhaps. And, I'm in the hallway and I'm hanging out. I can't for the life of me remember the name of the band. It was like a young English band who I had befriended earlier that day. And they were one of those ones who got kicked out of their backstage at like 3 p.m. and were now chilling in the hall all day. And we're hanging out, and Slipknot starts coming out of the backstage rooms and working their way to the stage. And I'm like, you know, maybe a little drunk, maybe a little stoned at this point. Who knows? And Slipknot's walking out, and I'm like, hey, it's fucking Slipknot. Look at them, the guys with the mat. They already had the masks on, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And the long nose guy comes right up to my face, goes right into my face, and goes, boogie, woogie, 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 woogie. Just makes this bizarre noise and just walks off. And I'm like,
that's amazing.
The majesty of Slipknot. It's true. It's real.
Like, it's all real.
Yeah, it's
real.
All real. They wear their masks all the time. They make strange noises at people in the hall. I'm like, this is great. Like, this is... And then I went up to the stage and watched the show. And I was like, holy shit, this is a fucking show. Like, oh, yeah. I didn't even know much about Slipknot, honestly, besides for like a couple songs I'd heard on, you know, MTV or something. Mm-hmm. And I walked away from that show going like, whoa, this is like a whole thing. Now, yeah. Like, what's it like coming into that fold and what's it like, kind of, you know, with the masks off, as it were?
Or
do you have an NDA?
I do have an NDA.
Oh.
But, okay. I mean, even still, there's not like,
whoa.
I don't have like a lot of like, oh, here's the secrets, even if I didn't, you know?
Right.
It's not, it is a really like, production wise, like you were saying, it is like a spectacle.
Right.
Which is super fun. Like,
yeah, sure.
Just to be a cog in any of that. And I do think they're one of those bands that are kind of, they do seem larger than life because they have more going on, like beyond the normal band thing, with like the masks and everything.
Yeah.
And like tons of production. Like they do things big, which not a lot of people have the, I don't know, like the foresight or the dedication or the follow through to really do, or even the fan base to be able to support that.
Right. Sure.
But it's like, I mean, that's the thing. You're probably not going to see Slipknot play like, you know, an intimate fly date with right. whatever. Like, we've done a couple little small things with like, you know, a scaled down thing. But even still then, it's like as much as you can, like it's still way more than what another band would kind of do in that situation.
Right.
And I think that stuff's like really interesting and commendable and definitely speaks to like the whole vision of the thing.
Sure. Now, like behind the scenes, would people be shocked at Slipknot's normality? Or is it like the Valhalla of decadence that people probably imagine?
No, I mean, like everybody's just a person, right?
Yeah.
But I mean,
with a mask isn't. I mean, it's the whole Batman thing, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've all worn masks on Halloween and transformed into like a totally different.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like liberated or decadent personality.
Right.
Based on like that little switch alone.
You know how many times I've just felt like a sexy nurse on Halloween?
Hundreds.
So yeah, like what, I mean, what's the vibe like? I mean, is it family style? Is it wild? Like what's it like in the Slipknot camp?
I mean, honestly, most of it is, there's so many people on it. There's like, there's 100 crew.
Wow.
There's a lot going on. So for me, it's most of my day is like, I get up, load in, and then hang out in Guitar World like all day.
Yeah.
Cause it's kind of like my space and sure. also just want to do my job and enjoy it and make sure that everything's good.
How much stuff are you managing in Slipknot?
Just one guy, but that's like, our rigs aren't small.
Right.
And it's not like, there's not a whole lot of things that are like, oh, well, we better switch to Axe FX cause it's digital and it's small footprint and it'll save on shipping or things like that. It's like, you know, they want to sound the best and do what's fun and what they're comfortable with.
Yeah.
So there's enough. Plus, I don't know, with my guy too, I kind of encourage also like, you have a lot of cool guitars. Let's bring them out.
And who do you tech in Slipknot?
For Jim Root.
Okay. I found like there's some interesting like fan sites for Slipknot that were kind of like stalking you.
Me?
Yeah. There's literally like a Reddit thread about who Jim Root's guitar tech is, and like little like Instagram clips and stuff, like maybe showing you and stuff like that. It's some pretty hardcore fandom, man.
That's weird.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure to quell that. I mean, he's definitely posted like a photo of the two of us, like in Guitar World. So I don't think it's any secret or anything like that.
If you guys have a great tour, sure. Do you get like tour masks?
What do you mean?
You know how like sometimes they're like, great tour, here's like jackets with like the tour embroidered on them. Do you just get, you all get tour masks?
No tour masks.
Oh, bummer. You should bring that up, Jim Root. I don't know. Such a cool thing. I could listen to dudes on pedestals playing like steel drum, like, I remember just being like, what am I watching? It's like metal meets Mad Max, but it's like super melodic. There is
a Mad Max vibe going on.
Yeah. Like
there is.
That's a good.
And that's the thing. They're like pretty unique in a lot of ways and do so many different things. You know, like if another band has 9 members with 2 percussionists, like then they're going to be called a Slipknot clone. If they wear masks, yes. They're going to be called a Slipknot clone. Yes. There's many things that make this band what it is.
Yeah.
So if someone else does that, it's just immediately associated with it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Good kind of cool.
They cornered a bunch of markets.
Yeah, there's not a lot of bands who could say that. They're on like a small list with like Kiss, Rush.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. We can't go through. Speaking of Kiss and Rush, it's actually something I wanted to talk about because I've thought about it before. And like, you know, we even had not that issue, but that commentary with Gaslight, you know, where you start getting into bigger rooms and it's like, wait, like these stages are bigger. There's more people here. Do you have to bring lights? Do you have to start like providing an extra element of the show as like part and parcel for like the ticket price and things like that? Like, do you think like a band at some point like owes a show to their audience?
I think so to a certain level. Like in the case you're mentioning, like, okay, so say as Gaslight started playing big rooms, you know, do you continue doing the same show and bring, you know, like the club show to the PNC without, you know, like extra lights or all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I think at a certain point you do kind of have to scale up just to like protect your band's vibe or vision. Like if you don't do it, like somebody is going to be running the lights, right? Like there's going to be some sort right. of lighting thing.
Yeah.
So if you have some input into that, and like have your own person or have your own lighting package that you've, you know, created or you've agreed on, then that's, you know, that's just like the next step of your band and furthering like that exponential growth of your vision
right.
and your like visual representation. So I do think, I don't know, I kind of think it's like, it can be seen as one of those hesitant things to bands who are like, you know, like we're just a, you know, like we're a rock band, whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Or we're a punk band or something. And like there's the reluctance to sort of to grow into that bigger area.
Right.
But I mean, it's also an opportunity to expand on that vision or that representation, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I kind of think like the kind of light show you put on
right.
represents you whether you want it to or not.
So I mean, as far like as lights, that's just like you know, you need the ability to like control your own show, right? But like, say a band just takes their club show and goes to like an arena and just puts it on that stage. Like, how weird does it look if they just don't do anything? Like, it looks weird, right?
No, I mean, I've seen it work. Like
who makes that work?
I mean, if you think of band like the Black Keys or Springsteen or like any of that, like they're not doing
yeah, that's true.
like a bunch of explosions and a bunch of, you know, like nobody's flying into the rafters or doing all this crazy stuff. They're kind of like, you know, you take the idea of what your show vibe is and you just try to figure out a creative way to make it work in like a larger space. Like I saw one Black Keys show that was in an arena and I thought it was cool where they had a, like a video wall kind of thing that floated above the stage and a lighting truss. And when they did songs that were like a chunk of songs that were just the two members on stage again, they would bring all of that in.
Oh.
So it like kind of tightened up the physical stage space.
Right, right.
Which I thought was kind of cool. And even on like festival stages, you know, like I'll encourage bands if, you know, like if all of a sudden you're used to playing clubs and then you're playing a festival where you have 150 feet from left to right. And I see a lot of people take that room. They're like, oh, whoa, we have all this room. We can do it. Like,
right.
Don't do that.
Don't do it. Yeah.
It kills the vibe. Like,
right.
Like for Against Me or something, it was always a pretty tight setup. And I think that encouraged like how band members played on each other.
Okay.
Or how even how you can hear, like if you're used to having, you know, being able to hear the bass cab because it's, you know, 15 feet behind you.
Right.
When it's 45 feet behind you and way off to their side.
Yeah.
I think it messes with your show.
Sure.
Like how, like you don't want to struggle to hear.
Just your performing vibe. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think if you can kind of keep things consistent and not just be like, oh, I have this opportunity.
Huh.
Like it's going to throw you and it's going to probably make you act weirder on stage or something.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Try some moves you never practiced in the mirror before. You don't want to do that.
Yeah. Like I definitely made that same mistake. I remember being 18 and, you know, like played shitty little bars. And then we played Milwaukee Metal Fest. That was like in a little arena and we played it, I don't know, 1 p.m. or something. And it was a massive stage with all these like, you know, rental backline,
right?
Like full stacks. And I'm like, I'm going to plug into every one of these full stacks and I'm going to go set up on the far side of stage. And like, it was brutal. Like the drummer couldn't hear, like he wasn't used to having monitors around.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So you had to rely on all these other variables. We had to stop a song in the middle because none of us were playing like the same part.
Yeah.
We all just kind of looked at each other and hit an open note and then like stopped at the same time. We're like, what is happening?
That's too good.
So from like that moment on, I was like, all right, we need to like stick to what we're used to regardless of the situation.
Yeah. Don't fuck around. So say like next week or like say, whenever Love and Pain releases their new music, and it blows up, becomes international success.
We're the new Coldplay.
you're the next Chris, kid. You got it in you.
Like, we're the next U2. Apple Music puts all of our records on your phone, whether you want it or not.
Love and Pain is a Samsung artist.
Android only
product.
Green text.
So take that hypothetical. Like, you guys get huge, and all of a sudden, you have carte blanche as far as, like, the stage show you want to do. What are you doing?
I mean, it's hard to say specifics, but I'd do some real cool vibey shit, man.
Yeah, were you talking screens? Like, we talking props?
Two Marshall A-10s. Both with JMPs, left and right of you.
There'd be a whole lot of amps, a whole lot of guitars. Probably do some like set, like we're playing in some weird, spooky graveyard from the 50s.
right.
Stage is covered in haze the entire time. Purple haze in my brain. Yeah, bunch of cool stuff.
Going and who are you hiring as your guitar tech?
Ooh.
Oh man.
Yeah.
That's a great question.
Yeah, I asked it. Come on, Brad.
One name popped to mind, but if I say this name, then every other guitar tech I know is going to be like, what the hell, man?
So, I know.
Yeah.
Give me the initials. Let me
The first name that popped into my head is Pat Benson.
Oh, because he's love Pat Benson.
Yeah, he's my boy.
Yeah. I think that's your friend.
Yeah. I mean, even I definitely would not pick someone that I know to be the most technically proficient,
right,
is going to solve every problem that may arise and entertain any whim over someone that's going to get the vibe and be it a homie.
Well, I mean, that's half of the job, right? Of being,
it is
being the crew, you know,
unfortunately. Yeah. Not like for that. Like, I mean, unfortunately for, I mean, I know many people who are very technically proficient who get fired because it's just not the vibe.
Right.
But I also know people who are like very much the vibe who get fired because they are not as technically proficient as the job would demand.
Yeah. It's interesting.
It's that like tough balance thing for everybody, you know? And it changes from group to group, you know, job to job.
Sure. Now, Brad Clifford, you're one of the most like committed travelers.
Detestable humans.
No. You'll find out in the intro how much I actually love you, Brad. You know I love you, and you're going to find out how much.
Did you already record an intro?
Not yet.
Okay.
I had to see how this panned out. See if you're a fucking dick about it. You know?
You're like, Brad Clifford, I used to like him a lot. Things have changed a bit.
Yeah. After 70 minutes on Zencastr, dead to me. But I was going to say, you're one of just the most committed travelers I know. You know, like one of those people who you never seem to tire from the road, you know, like we'll show up in Brussels and I'll be like a total bummer throwing my stuff on the bed. Just like, ugh. And you're like, come on, let's go. Like, come on, we're doing this. We're doing the thing. Let's go. You know, and I'm like, fine, Brad.
I do kind of sound like that.
Put on two pairs of socks because I know you're going to make me walk like 17 miles.
It's true. When Brad Clifford says it's 15 minutes, it's half an hour.
It's at least. No, I got it on my phone. Let's go. But like, when did that start for you? Like, was there a lot of travel as a kid with your family? Like, was this instilled in you? I know you do a lot of traveling with your mom now. Was that carrying on old traditions, or like, when did this start for you when you knew you just loved being out there like that?
I don't know. I didn't do like a normal amount of family traveling. We weren't like nomad family or anything, but I think especially this last year and a half or whatever has definitely taught me that it's not like this inherent, like gotta get out there travel thing in me, because now there are many times that my girlfriend would be like, we should go away for the weekend or something. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, I have a lot of stuff I kind of want to take care of too.
Right.
So I've kind of learned it's not this inherent thing. I think it's more just like taking advantage of the opportunity that you're in. Mm. Right. Like, I don't want to be the dude who someone is like, oh, you've been to Brussels. What's it like? And you're like, I mean, it looked like this from the window. Yeah, you know, like,
right,
if
right.
I spend enough time just like in a venue or in a parking lot that if there is the opportunity to go check something out, like, I'd like to take advantage of the opportunity.
Right.
So I think it definitely stems more from that than the like, I'm real antsy. I always got to go somewhere kind of thing.
Yeah, right. So it's not some like, it's not like born of necessity.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, that's definitely one of the advantages of touring and things like that is getting to see many parts of the world that you would never have an opportunity to see otherwise, unless you like really dedicated time and resources to that.
Totally.
And there's tons of cool shit in the world, and there's tons of like, weird, like, you know, like Atlas Obscura was always my, like, every morning I'd see what's near and to find out like what weird quirky stuff was around.
Yeah,
what skeleton is in my direct vicinity?
That is 100% my life. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. All right, since Jared brought up skeletons, let's just get right to this.
Okay,
because we were sharing a hotel room one night.
Okay.
I don't even remember what city we were in.
Paris.
It was in, all right.
And I know what this story is going to be.
Oh, I know this story too.
And you know, I'm vibing. I think like I'd been in the room. I was probably like doing yoga, trying not to like, you know, like hate myself or something. And you know,
you're running your third bath.
Yeah, running my third bath. And you know, doing the thing. And you show back up and you have like kind of a mischievous little grin on you. And I'm like, what? What's going on? And you had told me, I don't think I saw it because I was terrified, but you had told me that a bone had miraculously left the crypt of somewhere in Paris and wound up in my damn hotel room. And I was like, what is this juju you just brought to me? What is this? I'm doing yoga here to try to leave the spirits. The spirits on the other side of the door. You just invited them in. So
it's true.
Dude, what the fuck happened? You really took a bone from a crypt?
I did not, actually. So we had a day off in Paris. A bunch of people were going to go to the catacombs. And I had been there like the month before. So I was like, oh, I'm going to go. I don't know what else I did that day.
Yeah,
go roam around to some other thing I hadn't done in Paris. And jokingly, I said to someone else who was going, I was like, bring me back a skull. And they're like, oh, okay. And then, so I get a text. He's like, are you back at the hotel? I'm like, yep. We're like, all right, I'm coming to your room. I'm like, okay. And they walk in with like that same mischievous smile. And they're like, what's up, bud? I'm like, what's up? He's like, I got something for you. What?
And he talks just like that. Yeah.
Yep. And just tosses me something. And I'm like, what? I catch it. And it's a piece of human bone
from
the catacombs in Paris. So probably from like the Black Plague era. It's probably like a little chunk of a femur or something like that.
Yeah.
And
what are we talking here? Like 2 inches, 4 inches?
It's probably like 3 inches by 2 inches or something like that.
Sizable.
Yeah. I was like, oh, no way. I was stoked because I'm a creep. and I was very appreciative. And I was like, what? You didn't yank this off something? He was like, no, I saw it on the ground. I mean, have you been to the catacombs?
No.
Okay. Whatever. Lots of skulls, lots of old stuff. Lots of like, but there's, you know, pieces that chip off or something like that.
Right, sure.
So he's like, he saw it on the ground and was like, oh my God, here's my chance for bread.
Yeah.
And then like pretended to tie his shoe and like stuck it up his sleeve.
So,
and then I, kept it in my bag and brought a curse to all of our future hotel rooms for that trip. But
where does it live now?
Oh, it's in my living room, babe. It's in a glass jar with a little wood pedestal, whatever you call that thing.
Oh, you did it. You did it.
Oh, it's got to be on display, right?
You've honored it.
Yep.
Man.
And I've had nothing but fortuitous experiences ever since.
It's true.
I am just shocked that this person could go about this act and not pass out whilst doing it. Because I think whenever I think of going in the catacombs, I'm not sure I could do it. I think I would be into in my head, let alone put a human bone up my sleeve and carry it around with me.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Pull a fucking Shawshank in there.
Needed smelling salts. The whole thing.
I mean, if there was a human skull laying there, I would have stuck that down my pants and and hightailed out there. Like, all right, that stuff doesn't freak me out. Is it?
One last sex act
family. Oh, that kind of down the pants. See, I wasn't even thinking of that nasty stuff.
Oh. Well, you know me. I've had sex with a ghost before, so.
Oh, boy.
Tell us about that, Benny.
Oh. I actually had. I just told the story on a pretty recent episode.
which guest? I might not have heard this one.
I don't remember when we recently got into hauntings, but it was just a few weeks ago.
Okay.
We'll talk about it in private, but I'm almost certain that I had a paranormal sexual experience.
Did you climax?
Yes.
Great success.
Yes, I did. So, all right. So you have this in your house.
Never mind.
We're not allowed to name names of the person who did it, right? We don't want to do that. We don't want to air that.
I don't think it really matters either way.
Oh, yeah, because we don't use his real name. Mav I want to live. All right, no more inside jokes. No one will get our lamb jokes in the interview. But it's too fucking funny. You freaked me out so bad that night.
It's true. You were like legitimately bummed.
Yeah, I made sure to never messing with voodoo. I don't, you know, like I like leaving that stuff alone. It's like, you ever seen Ian Perkins in New Orleans?
Yes.
Like, he won't even leave his room.
It's true.
He's so scared of the voodoo that you do, you know? I'm kind of the same way when you take, like, you know, what, 1,000-year-old bones out of things. So I don't know if I've ever told you this, Brad, but, you know, right before I die, like, if I have, like, some little, like, an hour in purgatory or whatever is going to happen, I was always hoping that I'd get to read my life almanac, you know?
Really?
Basically stats. You know, you know, I love stats, and I wanted to read like the stats of my own life, like weird shit, like how many miles have you driven, like total, like how many, you know, how many times have you like, how many
What's
hours?
Your batting average?
Yeah, how many hours have you collectively pissed in your whole life? Like weird shit. I'm just curious. And one of the things I think about is what city or place that I have not lived have I spent the most time in?
Okay.
What would that city be for you? I'm curious.
Probably like LA or something like that. You know, if you are there for a month making a record, that's, you know, going to stack hard against every other day you've had a show day and an off day or something like that. You know?
The boring LA.
What do you think?
For me,
I mean, it must be the same for you, like a place where you made a record and
I
spent a good grip of time.
I kind of have like some years that I did like couch surfing and stuff. So strangely for me, it could be like Woodbridge, New Jersey, you know, like, like because of non-touring couch surfing that I did when I was young.
What if you took it out of your home state?
Actually, because of the two albums, it's probably Nashville.
Okay.
Because between those two, you know, I spent like 3 months in that city. Yeah, it's probably that. I know the year 2007, I spent more time in Florida than New Jersey. And in 2008 and 9, I spent more time in Germany than New Jersey. Mm. If it's Germany, we're not going to tell
more time in Germany than New Jersey.
That happens. The Germans. Wow. Thank you, Gunnar. You know,
it's true.
So, Brad, we have a fan question.
Oh, boy.
You have a big fan that was hanging out with us in the studio today.
It's true.
That's weird already.
Yeah. He's like, oh, you're interviewing Brad Clifford?
I follow him on Instagram.
I'm an Instagram enthusiast. An enthusiast.
Enthusiast.
Yeah. So this guy has a question for you, a fan question for Brad Clifford. Brad Worrell.
Hey, Brad. Dave from New Jersey here. What piece of music most influenced the person you are today? And what was your worst guitar-related injury?
Well, Dave from New Jersey. my worst... Man, the worst guitar-related injury, I feel like, would be an easier question to answer. I feel like I don't have many guitar-related injuries. I feel like I have inflicted guitar-related injuries. like in Since By Man, as bands tend to do from time to time, you swing around the headstock of your guitar and your singer's face just happens to be there.
Right.
And they have to get stitches or something.
Oh, this happened?
Oh, yeah.
You took out a face of your singer?
Yeah, there was like a moment where, you know, someone's going down on the headbang and your headstock is sort of coming up and their face explodes. Credit, we were in France on like the only little like shitty DIY European tour the band ever did. Super fun, but like really small like punk venues and fun stuff. So we're just playing on the floor of like a community center kind of thing.
Right.
And his face just explodes.
Oh.
And maybe, I don't know, like a couple songs left or something. So he's a ruler of a dude. So he just does the rest of the show.
He carried on.
Yeah. Whoa. And there's blood everywhere.
Whoa.
And then right after, he like runs off, goes to the bathroom, which is like, you know, the public bathroom. And I run in and I'm like, dude, are you okay? And he's like, I'm fine. Wait, don't you have a camera? Why aren't you taking pictures of this?
Oh, what?
And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, that's my guy.
Yeah. Yeah. You're trying to do like the, what is it? The metalhead who took all the pictures of his friend.
Mayhem.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm just checking if my guy's okay. And he's like, no, we just got to document the blood.
Yeah, yeah, for the next album cover.
Yeah, right.
That's awesome. So, so that's probably the most physical damage. Never on yourself?
No. I mean, the most like physical damage that I've caused is like repairing. Well, I don't know. Like this year, I was like chiseling part of a headstock and the chisel was very sharp and new, and kind of the blade slipped to the side and cut through the meat of my thumb pretty notably.
Yeah.
And I just kind of like looked up at the guy I was having a conversation with at the time. I was like, oh shit. And then ran to the bathroom and saw the damage and then ran back. I was like, I need a ruling, super glue or hospital. and showed him. And he's like, okay, hospital, let's go.
Yeah. What are those?
Yeah, just like guided me to his car.
Wow.
But as far as shows, I can't remember any times that I've like messed myself up with my own guitar, I guess.
Okay.
I see the guitar more as like a weapon that one wields as opposed to one that hurts the one that is holding it.
Yeah, so you're more like Ben Weinman style. Like just stab people in the stomach with it.
Yeah, to a lesser extent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. What about the other question from your biggest fan, Dave?
The piece of music that's most influenced my life. Is that what it was? Something along those lines?
It's deep.
I guess it would have to be something in like formative years of listening to music. Like the first thing that would come to mind would think of like a Converge, The Saddest Day or something like that. Like something that really made you lose your mind at a young age at a show and realize how deeply something resonates.
Sure.
Enough to sort of put a life on a trajectory.
Yeah. You were like a hardcore metalhead when you were a kid, right?
Yeah. I mean, I was like very into Nirvana and very into Cannibal Corpse.
Right.
Kind of thing in like grade school and high school. But as soon as I kind of understood, like I had some friends who listened to hardcore, but I thought that was just like punk, which never musically was like my vibe. It was too much of a simple thing.
Right.
As opposed to my like at the time complex like death metal tastes.
Yeah, right.
But then like specifically with Converge, a friend had it on once in like grade school or high school. And I was like, what? This is a metal band. He's like, no, it's not. It's a hardcore band. I'm like, what? Like, what do you see as this not being metal? He's like, well, they don't have long hair.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm like, okay.
Yes.
But then also like, I'm like, okay, no long hair. Check. Got it. But then he's like, oh, it's like, plus it's not about like horror movie stuff. And then that's when I was like fully in because I was never into like the horror movie aspect.
Right, right.
I was like, oh, this is like things that often, I should say, things that matter or people talking about important issues or something like that, much more so than the metal world
of
things that I was into or doing. So that's what appealed to me about hardcore. And it was much more of like a community thing and like a proactive thing and a change thing. And all that stuff kind of resonated. And then I was interested in like a scene, I think, for the first time because of that.
Hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. Like, and I mean, the difference between metal and hardcore at times is so thin musically.
Oh, absolutely.
It really just has to do with like presentation and lyrics, right? That's the only thing that really changes it.
Yeah. I guess that's a lot of music now too. It really is like the...
Yeah, right.
Like how it's marketed more so than what it sounds like.
Sure. because apparently Machine Gun Kelly and Jimmy Eat World are the same genre, right? Like at this point.
Yeah, it seems like now they are, yeah.
I think they are, yeah.
Shaking my head.
Hey, times change, Jared. You know, you're younger than me. You shouldn't be angrier than me.
What are you shaking your head
He's
at,
He's over here just shaking his damn head.
Shaking. S-M-D-H.
S-M-D-H.
Damn, kids. So... You want to know what's funny? Before we started this, I had texted two people we toured with extensively, one of which was the Bone Thief and the other being Ian Perkins. And I'm like, random question. I'm like, what's the funniest Brad Clifford memory you have?
No.
And you want to know, you'll enjoy this. You want to know what the unifying factor between both of their answers was?
There was a unified answer. Wow.
A unifying factor.
Oh, okay.
Which was fur. Are you proud?
This makes it sound like I'm a furry and both of them have a story about this.
I mean, apparently which I think, you are.
Well, in one person's, I think I know what they would be referring to in this. Not far from a furry activity, but I don't know what the other one would be.
Well, what is the one you think?
We were at the Paramount Long Island.
Yeah.
And there's like a little bar below there that we all went to after like they had open for us. And there was a bearskin, like a fake bearskin rug.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, I mean, you know what you got to do on a bearskin rug. And it was like in a little side room.
Yeah.
So then I just got in my underwear and laid on a bearskin rug.
You not only laid on it, I believe you stood up and paraded around wearing it almost as like a cape.
And now you get what I'm talking about, full circle, where I'm just waiting on everyone else to get drunk to do the dumb shit that I want to do sober.
Yeah, yeah, right there. It's right there for you. Now, the other one from the High Man, Ian John Perkins, was...
John.
He's like, my instant first thing is that mad picture of him on the fur rug eating a banana. Is that the same instance or a separate fur instance?
He's got it a little confused.
Oh, he has it mixed up.
Yeah. He's probably thinking of the same fur rug incident, but the banana thing was, we were at, I don't know, some venue in Vegas and it was some like big show stage kind of thing. And by one of the dressing rooms, they had like a whole giant rack of costumes for whatever other like house production it is of like, go-go dancers, I don't know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And there was one that was like a, I don't know, like a latex top corset-y kind of thing that had like the chest cut out of it kind of thing.
Yes.
And so I was just like trying on all these outfits.
Go on.
And I like was running around with this one, like whatever weird latex top was it on.
Uh-huh.
And the tour manager, who was a very good photographer, our buddy Scotty, was like, let me get a shot. So I jumped on top of this, I think it was a piano that was in the room and like grabbed a banana that was nearby and gave it like a sultry eating a banana in this latex top while wearing a, while eating a banana.
Very sexy.
Very. You know, it's
very sexy.
It's just what I strive for in these situations.
I know, Brad. It's a good thing you never did that when we were rooming together all those years.
What, eat a banana in a sultry way?
If I looked over one night and you were, you know, in your skivvies eating a banana wrapped in bear skin, I might not have been able to do anything about it. You know? There's no control at that point. You're already slim and handsome. I don't know if I could have. I don't know if I could have taken it. So you got any, epic trips with mom coming up?
No, she just came out here. I saw her for the first time in a year and a half.
So tell the people, like, you have a really cool thing going with your mom in the last many years where you guys choose places to go, national parks, and you get out and you hike. Like, what's the deal with that? How did that start? Like,
just started. Actually, I remember it was on a Gaslight tour. We were in Minneapolis and I was talking to my mom on the phone and she was talking about how she was trying to go to the Grand Canyon because she's always wanted to hike to the bottom. I was like, what do you mean you've always... She's like, no, for like almost my whole life, I've wanted to hike to the bottom of the Grand Canyon, but I don't know who would go with me. I'm like, this is the first time I've ever heard of this, A. Like, you should never want to do something for decades and not do it.
Right.
And I'll go with you. Let's do it. So then we went, hiked to the bottom of the Grand Canyon, had a great time. And then it sort of became this like yearly do a national park trip kind of thing.
And do you guys like proper camp? Like what do you do when you're out?
No, we never have. I don't think she has like a deep interest in doing like a full backpacking thing.
Right,
doing all that and bringing all your food and your camp stuff. So it's more just like lighter pack, like day trip kind of things. And we'll stay at I don't know what you call it. Like in Yosemite, we stayed at like a little tent that we rented for like, you know, $12 or whatever.
Right.
No, it was just like a little like camp tent. They have like a little cot. You bring your sleeping bag and simple. That's the vibe kind of thing.
Awesome.
Or sometimes just stay in like a normal hotel kind of thing. But yeah.
Matt, how is it? Like, I mean, you know, readdressing like a, you know, relationship with your mom later in life and spending like that much time together in such an intimate way. Like, have you been able to connect on like a deeper level, a next level that you weren't able to when you were younger?
Yeah, it's definitely less of like a son parent kind of vibe.
Right.
And now just like friends. So it's kind of funny coming into that from perspective and talking about all the stuff that like I did as a kid and then lied about. Right. And we'll just talk about that.
Yeah.
And sometimes we'll sort of get in like truth telling sessions of, and her being like, okay, so Brad, I've got to ask, in fifth grade, did you smash the window and then tell us that a burglar must have broken in and then the police came and then you told the police that you didn't do it? So then all of us thought we got burglarized. And I'm like, hell yeah, that was me 100%.
Oh my God.
I'm in fifth grade. I just think I don't want to get grounded and it doesn't go further than that. So yeah, I was locked out of the house and I smashed the window in on accident when I was trying to jimmy it open.
Yeah, yeah.
That's amazing.
So you get to like have late in life admissions. How's her reaction to it? Is she like, you little prick, or does she just think it's funny now?
I mean, she's smart. Like, right. I'm sure most parents are much more aware than we ever give them credit for.
Yeah, probably.
Like, I'm sure the same is for you, that I'm sure your kids think they're getting away with stuff all the time that you're like, I'm letting you have this, but I know what's going on, you know?
yeah, that is true.
But it's kind of funny to be at a good place later in life where you just come around and none of that stuff matters anymore. So
yeah. Now let's say say we're flying the walls. Like I'm flying a drone or something and I, you know, catch you in the middle of a Grand Canyon hike or something. What's something you two are getting into? You doing philosophy? You doing existentialism? You talk about religion? Like, are you proper getting deep, or is it really just kind of like just really nice and casual at this point?
I guess there is some sort of like not like terribly deep philosophical kind of things, but I mean, I have lots of opinions on life, and she does too, of different ideologies, and we'll get into that a bit. But that being, it's not like it's definitely never confrontational. Right. I've probably likened this to you before as a simple definition, but my mom is personality wise 100% Marge Simpson. So like that's the simplest and best way I can put it.
Yeah. Okay.
And you know, you don't really get in like a big blowout or a tense situation with Marge Simpson. Like the most she's going to do is be like, "Oh, Brad, I don't know if I agree with that."
Right.
Or be like, "Oh, like I see what you mean." But
well, maybe it makes sense that you spent so many years attempting to shock people, you know? This is kind of tying together. Here, Brad, lay down on the couch for a minute for me, huh?
Let's get analyze me. Fix me.
Fix me.
Why do I want this old skull? What is wrong with me?
It's not why do you want it. It's why you don't care. That's what. Of course, everyone wants it. It's a cool old skull.
The thing I never understood is like, wait, Brad's really smart. He's not, you know, abject to mysticism. He's not abject to spirituality. You know, he's open to these things. So I just figured he'd be more like me in the idea that, like, you just kind of don't want to mess with it, you know? Like,
I think the messing with it leads to there possibly being evidence that it's real.
Oh.
Yeah, I think Jared's onto something.
Yeah? Is that what you're doing?
You tempt it to see if... Let's go. Where are you at?
Yeah.
Let's go.
Well, he almost he almost brought me with him, you know?
All right, so I got your skull in my North Face bag. I got your skull in my luggage. What do you got? Yeah. Is Benny right? Show me something. Strike me down with lightning if it's real.
You got by midnight, G-O-D.
Otherwise, I know you're full of shit.
It's funny, too. In that same Since by Man interview I pulled the quote with before, you were making baby Jesus comments, too. So,
really?
Yeah, you've been on this. You've been on I've been on such a
just acting like a kid, saying weirdo stuff all the time. Yeah. I was a little nervous when you said you were reading through old interviews because, I don't know, maybe a year ago, I like Googled something.
Yeah.
And I found some stuff that is definitely like changing of the times that I, in retrospect, like am very embarrassed to have said.
Sure.
Like I remember reading one and kind of my answer for something was like, oh, something. And I said like, for some retarded reason.
Right. Yeah.
And I was like mortified reading my name attached to this. And I'm like, oh, like I would never say that today.
Of course.
And I'm like, hopefully this speaks to how like I, and hopefully most of the world is like growing in terms of awareness of what's not cool to say and what's like, on what's judgmental and what is, you know, insensitive and things like that.
It seems as if people are going to have to come up with a new barometer for that at some point, because, you know, as the years go on, the direction we're going, every single person on earth is going to be subject to 12-year-old tweets,
you
know, 13-year-old posts, 14-year-old blogs, you know, like all this shit. And, you know, the 12, 13, 14-year-olds are fucking stupid and are going to continue saying dumb shit. And like,
it
pops up in sports a lot. You know, some guy will get drafted and they'll be like, ah, when he was 14, he wrote this tweet that said this.
Yeah.
And like, listen, we're just going to have to like, we really got to start looking at people's intentions a little bit, because, you know, you'll really be able to fucking nail everybody at this point, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I guess that speaks to looking at the intent of a law versus the, you know, like the letter of the law or something like that.
Well, intent has a lot to do with it. Like, you know, I've told this story before, but it always rings with me. It's like, I once had a very bad breakup and this said ex-girlfriend broke into my then MySpace page and wrote messages to every female person I followed being like, hey, I just follow you because I want you to suck my dick. And like, you know, these really like lewd messages to all these women. And literally not one of them thought it was me. There was like 20 messages back.
That's great.
And like 15 of them were like, dude, I think you got hacked. And then like five of them are like, Benny, like, are you okay? Like, what's going on, you know? And
yeah,
you know, like track record has something to do with it, right? Like,
oh yeah. If something that's way out of character for you, I mean, yeah.
So don't be a dick, right? And on that token, Brad, you know, you know, you come off to me as such a well-adjusted person in a lot of ways. I know that's like maybe hard for you to believe standing where you're standing.
Boy, have I got you fooled.
I mean, I listen, you know, I'm always waiting for the other shoe to drop with everybody.
Sure.
And for years, I would pick your brain and we'd go out and I'm like, I'm going to get to the meaty, vulnerable center of Brad eventually. And he's going to crack and tell me. I never could. You know, you're really consistent and really.
I've only got one layer.
And really kind of well adjusted. And like, you know, you have a nice way to put things in a place they need to be put. And
you like know, the human bone that's in my living room.
Exactly. But considering, you know, like the place a lot of people are at these days and trying to get to a good place, you know, maybe what are some tools you could offer people to, you know, wake up and get their head on right? Like, is there any kind of daily practice or discipline you take part of, or is there any advice you could throw down?
I don't really do many like daily practice or routine kind of things. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think most of it just stems from like, at least at this point in my life, I don't know how it came off earlier years or anything, but now like I just feel incredibly fortunate for many things. And you see like such a terrible and difficult world for so many people out there that, you know, in terms of living situations or things they've had to deal with emotionally or physically or things like that. So to have a relatively small amount of that in my life is just something I'm extremely fortunate for and try to recognize that, but then also try to recognize like what everyone else might be going through. You know, you talk with other friends or anybody else in life and everybody's going through stuff that takes a while for them to share or things that are really affecting them on like a person, like a core personality level. You can kind of see like how they are, like why they are how they are because of certain things.
Right.
And to not have anything that I necessarily identify with as like a deep trauma, be a part of that is just feeling really lucky. It's not like, oh, you can be chill and good if you just compare yourself to others and think you're doing all right.
Right.
But seeing sort of, how things could be so much worse and definitely in terms of, like jobs or lifestyle things, finding something in this life or many things in life that I'm like passionate about, I'm extremely thankful for whatever is responsible for that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And being able to like half-ass make my way into a living doing something that I enjoy and am passionate about.
Sure.
I think is somewhat rare for a lot. Like maybe that's a hobby for most people. Or not a priority for a lot of people too.
Sure.
And it does take sacrifice. You know, take something that you're into and make that the direction you're just going to like follow no matter what.
Yeah.
Despite what falls to the wayside because of it.
Sure.
But you know, most people just kind of have jobs or ways to make a living that they're not particularly invested in. You know, it's a means to an end or a means to support other interests.
Yeah.
But kind of not having to separate that for me is, I feel really lucky about.
Sure. Well, it sounds so like the discipline is recognition and the recognition leads to perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say so. And just feeling lucky.
Well, I hope you feel lucky enough to start building lights again because we're feeling a little naked here.
You're missing the vibe.
The music's a little lost without our pyramid light. I'm still waiting on
it's
gotten
our
dark.
Repair. But
I used to make some glass for anyone listening and not perspective. I like one of many hobbies. I would like make things out of glass and I made light, Benny a light.
A beautiful was
like
light.
It was like a glass pyramid.
I loved it.
That broke and came back to me. And since it came back to me, I have not once pulled out any of my glass supplies because like, you know, cause it is like, I have what feels like at times, like too many interests.
Yeah. Right.
And especially now, like, you know, living with my girlfriend and things like that, it's less, you know, it's more time like, oh, I'm going to hang out with my girlfriend as opposed to stuff that was just, I'm alone at home. What am I going to do?
Right. Well, just make me the promise that we're number one, Brad, because...
Oh, you're number one.
Listen, Mercy Union, we're doing fine. We're doing pretty good.
We're chugging along.
But you know, a guiding light...
But you could
light,
really be trucking.
A guiding light would be really helpful, you know?
What would you do if I made you a new pyramid that lit up, and then all of a sudden one day you're moving it around and you heard something... jiggle around a
there's
bit
a
on
fucking
the inside,
bone inside.
And there's a human bone in there. You look in there and you see through the little clear pinnacle You're like, that son of a bitch.
You know what I would do, Brad? I would take your spirit and I would gauge my response simply on what had happened from the time I received the light to the time I found it. And if that was positive, the curse is lifted and I'm with you, you know?
And it's all mumbo jumbo. Yeah, None of it's real.
This could be very good for me. This is like an emotional mental shower. Thank you, Brad. Let's do this. All right, dude. I've had you on here for a long time. This was so much fun.
Super fun.
Thanks for pulling a late nighter with us.
Oh,
after work.
It's not even that late here. Thank you guys for doing it this late.
Yeah. Well, I love you, Brad.
I appreciate it.
You're the best.
Love you guys very much.
Thank you
for having me on, and super fun.
Oh, boy. It's like, sounds like a couple of guys sitting around on the bus after a show. That's what it sounded
like. Now, let me ask your opinion, Brad.
Mm-hmm.
Say you're in my position with that bone story. What do you do? Are you okay with that?
I'm not that freaked out by bones, but you forget my dad was an archaeologist.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You were probably just, was your fucking house just filled with bones?
Yes.
So you're like, fucking, no big deal.
Yeah.
Get your one little bone out of here. I had Jesus's femur in my living room, bro.
Granted, a lot of the bones in my house were actually like petrified already. So,
right.
They were, one step removed from kind of the gross factor. But there were some fresher bones as well.
Now, in your experience, your vast experience with bones, like, did you feel vibes on it, or it's just a fucking bone?
I didn't get any vibes. So the only thing that I ever got vibes from was my sister came back from Africa and she brought me this handmade kind of like gazelle or something. I don't know what it was. And I got bad vibes from it. I was kind of like, and I thought that what I was feeling was that I just didn't like the way it looked, that I'm not into like folk art or whatever, you know?
Right.
But I put it up on my dresser and I realized that not every time, but every couple days I would come in and it would be turned around, like facing the wall.
Whoa.
And at first I thought that Eleanor, my roommate, was doing it. And I was like,
yeah.
It was such a thing for her to do, especially if she knew that I was kind of bugged by it.
Sure.
But I really grilled her on it. And then finally it happened when she had been gone for a couple of days.
Okay.
And so I got rid of it. That was the only time that I was like, this is too much. I can't deal with this. I don't know what's going on, but it's freaking me out.
Yeah, dude. All right. So you have had experience.
Yeah.
Maybe you were being a little cavalier about saying that you wouldn't have cared, huh?
Yeah.
That's fucking funny. Well, that was a great interview with Brad. I really appreciate him doing that.
Yeah, that was really fun.
I wanted to get behind the curtain on Slipknot, you know, but can't get too far.
Yeah,
so we got some socials. Turn. People should follow Brad on the Instagram. As you saw, he's a great traveler. And he even once told me that I was making fun of Instagram one day, and in all of his infinite positivity, he said, you know what? Instagram is the impetus for me to get out sometimes, trying to find a better picture, and it helps me travel and get out. And I'm like, you know what? I guess that's true. Good for you. So what is his Instagram?
Oh, it's Brad Clifford.
That's it.
Very simple.
Elegant, simple.
You can follow Jared Hart, jhart201.
Mm-hmm.
Mercy Union. Those guys got some stuff going on.
Couple two, three things.
You can follow Going Off Track, @GoingOffTrack.
Mm-hmm.
You can also follow us on Patreon by becoming a patron. And
yeah, that would be nice.
Could always use a few more patrons, you know, a couple more voices on the...
I'll tell you, the Fireside Chat. Fireside Chat's very nice.
Every Thursday.
It's a nice place for everybody to come and commune and talk. Really building a nice community here, Brad. Talk about everything. Fair game. Nothing's off the table.
It's true.
Ever. Even this last time, it was like 11 o'clock at night. and I just get into like hardcore politics. Like, right. I'm like, sorry, everyone. Sorry, sorry. I had to. I saw one of those fucking pickup trucks with the diesel stacks and I got all mad, you know?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? But yeah, thanks to everyone who listens to the program and joins the Patreon. We really appreciate it. And thanks to Brad and Jared for providing us with
coming
this
on board tonight.
Lovely interview.
Yeah.
So great. Much fun. Until next time, why don't we, Brad, you know what we should do this week?
What's that?
Let's recommit to kindness, baby. Come on.
I'm going to do it.
You with me?
I'm committing.
All right. I love it. All right. Let's do this.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.